Well, if you apply the ordinary common sense rules of everyday life to your table sittings, and any other form of investigation, you won't go far wrong. When you have established contact with your guide, either through the table, or the help of a fully developed medium, and found out what kind of development you are to try for, then you can go ahead. But if your spirit friends tell you that there is no guide ready for you at present, you have no other course but to wait, and join in their development of whichever other members of the circle may be fortunate enough to contact his guide, and start his special development. You will get a great deal of interest and pleasure from doing this, apart from the knowledge that you are helping another person's unfoldment. Agnes, Florence and Nellie were most unselfish in 126. Concentrating on my development, but they gained a great deal of psychic experience and were comforted and helped by the sittings which we all shared. Though Florence and Nellie were apparently not being developed for any special work, their own power must have been developed considerably by the sittings, as they got most interesting phenomena in their own home when they were quite alone. It was always of a spontaneous character, and they both had the strong conviction that they were not meant to try and harness it, or use it in any public or professional way. This, I think, was a pity, as they developed remarkable power in physical phenomena, especially in the movement of heavy objects without contact. Anyway, you will be a gainer and not a loser by taking part in well-conducted table sittings, attended by sincere and serious persons, whether you are singled out for a special line of development, or if you simply sit and help someone else. Previous to starting the development, one of the best things you can possibly do is to take a course of mental or thought control, so that you understand the power of thought and its influence on everything in our daily lives. This is most important. The average person understands nothing, or very little, about his higher mind. In Helen McGregor and Margaret V. Underhill's book on psychic development, it is referred to as the superconscious, and I like that word. He may not even know of its existence, and of the possibility of reaching up to it, and through it, too the treasure house of the spiritual world. Truth, intuition, inspiration may all be his, through this linking up of the conscious mind with the higher, because it is the higher mind that our spirit friends contact, and if there is a gap between the two minds, very little can be expected to filter through into their ordinary consciousness. By ordinary, I mean that part of our mind which we habitually use in everyday life, and through which we register impressions of objective things and facts. This part of the mind reasons, compares, deducts, and it is often wrong in its calculations and judgment, even when the greatest care has been exercised in trying to arrive at the right conclusions. But when one uses, or contacts, the higher or superconscious mind, one finds intuition and inspiration, and all the attributes of the world of spiritualism and truth. Then, our spirit friends and guides can help us, because we have reached up to their own plane of being. We can, spiritually and mentally, live with them at times. This does not mean that we must ignore the physical life and its material interests and duties, or neglect to exercise our powers of judgment and reasoning. Far from it. Their contact with the higher realm of thought, the realization of love and truth, will sharpen our ordinary faculties, augment them, and cast an illuminating light on everything around us. One important lesson that should be mastered is the control of thought. I mean their deliberate shutting out of pessimistic, jealous, envious, cruel, or any other undesirable kind of thought that is apt to fly into our minds. We must not hold those thoughts. It may. 127. be difficult at first to prevent them entering, but directly we realize them, we must literally throw them out again at once. We must not allow our minds to become rubbish heaps, littered by any unwholesome fragments that may be blown on our way, any day, any time, in these days of grave stress, strife and difficulty. A short time ago, I was very much in touch with a certain man and his wife. I often saw the most pleasant and happy spirit people round the husband. He was a sane, cheerful, and sympathetic man, whom everybody liked. His wife should have been liked, too, as she was extremely kind-hearted and even generous to a fault, and at times she could be what is called very good company, besides being young and pretty. The man was older and plain of feature, though I always saw his spirit friends visiting him quite naturally, and apparently finding pleasure in being near him. I never saw anybody near his wife. Once I saw her husband's father approach her, and then stop, exactly as if some invisible barrier had been placed between him and the wife. He looked surprised for a moment, made another effort to reach her, gave it up, and went back and joined the happy little group around the husband again. While I watched them both, I was struck by a kind of luminous condition, which I saw clairvoyantly round the husband. It extended over an area of 4 or 5 feet from his physical body. Then I looked at the wife, and not only was there no luminosity, but their atmosphere immediately around her appeared to be considerably darker than that of their rest of the room. I wondered why, but after some time in their company, I discovered whenever any of their spirit people were mentioned, she would always remember the most harrowing details of their respective illnesses and deaths, or any misfortune or suffering they had undergone in their physical lives. She scarcely, if ever, mentioned the loving, happy and jolly things they had done, or said. As soon as I mentioned anybody who had passed over, she would break in with, "Did you know she died of so and so? It was perfectly awful, my dear, her sufferings were terrible. She used to," and here would immediately follow a category of physical complaints, given with such gusto and elaboration of every unhappy detail, that I think a great deal of it was imaginary, but you see, it came from my friend's mind, it was born and held in her mind, whether it was true in substance or not. If this woman saw anybody with a swelling on the gum through toothache, she would whisper to me, "Shouldn't be surprised if that was a malignant growth. You see, it's just the way poor Aunt Emily began, etc., etc." One day she asked me why I never saw any spirit friends around her, so I plucked up courage and told her that she was making a gloomy, undesirable thought atmosphere around her, which her friends could not enter. She was astounded. At first she denied that she was gloomy and reminded me that she was always considered to be the life of the party wherever she went, which was quite true, but there party didn't see and hear her at other times, as I reminded her. 128. She was a reasonable woman, and thought seriously over what I had said. When I met her again a few weeks later, she had improved tremendously. I was able to see several spirit people quite close to her. Her health became better, and her face in repose wore an entirely different expression. The sudden fits of depression to which she had been subject had almost gone, and she told me that as soon as a destructive or hurtful thought entered her head, she would say, "Get out, I've no time for you, go, get out." It is quite possible to overdo the optimistic business, as a friend of mine calls it. One must not shut out all thoughts of caution or discretion, or try to become impervious to a sense of danger. Catching a thought ray of danger, and holding it gently at the back of one's mind, being careful not to let it unduly shadow any of one's actions with which it has obviously nothing to do, until such time as we have bridged the difficult span which it was given to warn us of, is a very different thing from being victims and slaves to any chance thought that we allow to enter our minds and have never learned to turn out again. To be fatuously optimistic is not only a sign of some innate form of selfishness, but often leads to harm when the person is investigating psychic matters. Some years ago, a lady, I will call her Mrs. N, came to me for a sitting. That same day she had received a letter from an old friend whose son was killed during the war, and had been in communication with his parents by sending messages to them through Mrs. N. Whenever she went to a medium, which was very often, as she was, what might be called, an ardent spiritualist, this letter contained an urgent request that Jacko, the son, should be asked by Fadel if he had any special message to send to his relatives. No other indication was given as to the possible nature of the desired message. Mrs. N. told me nothing about it until after our sitting, in which I had been in a trance as usual. "Did you get a message from Jacko?" I asked. "Well, no, not exactly," replied Mrs. N. "Fader was rather strange about it," she said. "Something important had happened, and that Jacko was looking after his mother. It was very important, but Fader said she could not explain. Something prevented her saying anything more about it. Of course, I know exactly what it was. Jackie has been with his mother, manifesting to her as he promised he would do, so I just told Fader not to bother herself, as I wanted a nice pleasant chat with," mentioning her own communicator. "And Fader was getting so terribly serious. What a pity you didn't try and get more about Jacko," I observed. "No," said Mrs. N. "I didn't want to spoil my lovely sitting because I knew just what it was. Jacko had been doing something extra clever for his mother, showing himself, or rapping, or something. Now wait and see if I'm not right." 129. At this moment, almost before Mrs. N. had ceased speaking, I saw in front of me a large, bright red light, exactly like a danger signal. I saw it objectively, and mentally there came with it the impression of great and sudden danger, and a certainty that Mrs. N. was wrong, and that Fader had tried to break some news to her of a tragic kind, but that Mrs. N.'s mind was so opposed to it, she had not been able to get it through. I immediately told Mrs. N. what I saw and felt. She was very positive that she was right and I was wrong, and rather indignant that I should suggest unpleasant things of that kind, so I could say no more. 3 days later I had another visit from her. She was very upset, as she had just received a letter from Jacko's people explaining that the reason they had asked for a special message from him was because his mother had been run over and killed by a motor lorry the night before. It was dark and she had not noticed the lights of the lorry as it had suddenly come round the bend in the road. They were terribly disappointed with their distorted version of the message Mrs. N. had passed on to them, and perplexed, too. As well they might be. Mrs. N. realized how obstinate she had been, and sent them a full account of what Fader had really said, and what I had seen and said after, which helped them to some extent. I have related these incidents just to show how much harm the persistently pessimistic and, on the other hand, the persistently optimistic people may do. One must learn to open oneself to truth calmly and without bias to whatever it may be. Any books, such as In Tune with the Infinite and Thoughts Are Things, are most helpful, and recently, the two books by Miss Underhill which I have already mentioned, and which contain full and detailed information about your spiritual and mental powers, and if you read them. In conjunction with Miss McGregor and Miss Underhill's joint work, and apply to yourself the perfectly straightforward and simple advice and rules contained therein. You cannot go wrong, and you will have already started well on the way to reaching your goal. Many mediums have developed their psychic power without any conscious mental training beforehand, and have done excellent work. The spiritual and mental knowledge has come afterwards, as a direct outcome of the mediumistic work, but I maintain that the best and safest plan is to understand and control one's mentality as far as possible before proceeding with the mediumistic development. 130. Chapter 38, Developing Physical Mediumship. The term physical covers a wide range of phenomena, such as materialization, direct voice, telekinesis, spirit photography, etc. Let us take materialization first. It is one of the rarest of powers, and sometimes manifests itself during the early childhood of the medium. It occurs spontaneously at first, and the relatives and friends of a child who possesses such a gift are often perplexed and frightened at the phenomena that happen at most unexpected times. The natural child medium is usually very sensitive, forward and precocious in some things, backward, and even stupid, and obstinate in others. Difficult to his parents, and difficult to himself, as neither they nor he have understood the reason of the strange happenings that occur in his vicinity. In these enlightened days, it is probable that some intelligent friend may explain their reason, and the child can be taken in hand, and guided carefully through his early youth, not suppressing or killing the phenomena, but explaining them to him in a simple way, and helping him to concentrate on any healthy absorbing subject, preferably connected with out-of-door life, for a few years. He should be told the facts about life after death, and encouraged to look upon those who have passed over as being kind, wise friends of his, who will help and protect him when occasion arises. Treatment of this kind would banish so much of that unnecessary fear of being alone, or in the dark, that many children have. As time goes on, the phenomena may disappear, and the child forgets all about them. Then, later on, something happens which brings them to his mind, the manifestations begin again, perhaps in a different or modified form, but sufficient to remind him of his early experiences. He links the two together, and resolves to do something about it. Or he may have had only a slight amount in his childhood, so little that it has scarcely been noticed at the time, but in later years it may show itself more strongly. For any person who thinks that he or she possesses power for materialization, the best way to begin development is to form a circle of say 5 to 12 people, a few of whom should be experienced sitters, and one of these should take the entire leadership of the circle. As a rule, the sitters form a complete circle, joining hands. A pair of curtains of some substantial, but not too heavy, material are hung across one corner of the room. Serge or fine woolen stuff of a darkish shade is good. We found claret color successful, but also dark blue or green. The medium usually sits in a chair in front of the cabinet, as their space behind the curtain is called. Later on, his guides may tell, or impress him, to sit inside the cabinet, leaving a vacant space in the side of the circle, thus forming it more. 131. Into a horseshoe shape, or a large table may be used around which the sitters are placed with their hands resting on the table, just on the extreme edge. Their little fingers usually touch, but the thumbs of their own hands must not touch each other. The object is for the power to run freely round the circle, from one sitter to another, so if one places his thumbs together, he blocks or cuts off the current at that point. Sometimes a materializing medium has developed a certain amount of trance condition first, either of the semi, or entirely unconscious order. The guides who are going to manipulate the psychic forces are already known to him, and he has probably been controlled by one or more of them. If not, then this part of his development will probably begin now, and the control, speaking through him, or impressing him, may alter or modify some of the arrangements from time to time. If the circle sit round a table, it is most likely that messages will be given through their table, at first by tilting, and then by loud raps. This happened in one circle in which I sat. The raps were so clear and distinct that we used to call them postman's knocks. By means of the alphabet, the guides will spell out any directions they wish carried out, and other messages, but it is as well not to use up too much power in getting answers to questions, or there will be little or none left for materialization. A great deal of patience may be required. One cannot tell how long it may be